It's Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Farah. You're with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up on Central Time, we find out how to transition to a more eco-friendly lifestyle without incurring stress, and maybe we can save some pennies in the process.
Yesterday, the FBI announced the rescue of 168 child sex trafficking victims and arrested 281 pimps in cities across the country. 12 of those arrested were in Milwaukee. 6 children were rescued in Wisconsin.
The arrests were part of the annual enforcement push known as Operation Cross Country. This is the 8th such week-long operation. Operation Cross Country is part of the FBI's Innocence Lost National Initiative. It was established in 2003 in coordination with the Department of Justice and the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children to address the problem of child prostitution.
Here to talk about child sex trafficking in the United States is Bridget Carr. She's the director of the Human Trafficking Clinic at the University of Michigan Law School. Bridget, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's start with an overview of Operation Cross Country. How does the FBI go about carrying on such a big coordinated effort like this one?
Well, so much of child sex trafficking and really human sex trafficking overall takes place on the internet. And so law enforcement can monitor a lot of what's happening. And so they do these operations every year or so and are able to take down a number of pimping organizations.
And the FBI announced that they arrested 281 pimps as part of this operation, rescued around 170 victims. How big a dent do numbers like those make in the overall effort to put sex traffickers out of business?
Well, sadly, we don't really know the prevalence of human trafficking or sex trafficking in America today. We don't keep track of the numbers very well. And the numbers you just cited give us an example of that. Of the almost 300 pimps that they arrested, one of the questions I always have is how many of those are women who are 18, 19, 20, who, if this operation had happened a month or a year ago, would have been in the victim category. It's a troubling reality of anti-trafficking work in America today that, you know, if you get caught before you turn some magic number, you may be considered a victim. But if you're 18 or above, you're probably going to be considered a criminal.
You said we don't really know how big a problem child sex trafficking is in this country, but we can triangulate a little bit, I'm guessing, based on some of the figures we do know. Can you give us a sense about how widespread it is?
We really can't, because I can tell you right now that a number of those victims, 16 and 17-year-olds who were found in the operation this week, if they were in Michigan, for example, and had been encountered by a state or local law enforcement in Michigan at 16 or 17, would have been charged as prostitutes under our state law. And each state differs in what age they view someone a prostitute or potentially a victim of child sex trafficking. So you can't really figure out the data points from that, because you essentially have 50 different state systems regulating prostitution, keeping track of data in different ways. It wasn't until a couple of years ago, even, that the Uniform Crime Reporting System for the FBI included trafficking as its own category.
Hmm. Well, what about safe harbor laws? Do those come into play?
So safe harbor laws mean different things to different constituencies. For someone like me, I hope that means immunity, that we treat victims of sex trafficking, specifically child victims, as victims of sexual abuse. However, the way it's interpreted by states can be very different. There are states that say they have safe harbor, and it just means that they have an affirmative defense for kids. There are states that say they have safe harbor, and it means that they have a presumption of victimization as long as you comply with court-ordered services. I hope that we get to a point in the U.S. where safe harbor means that you're treated as a victim of sexual abuse if you are a child sex trafficking victim.
Do you think there needs to be one uniform national standard for what safe harbor means?
That would be nice, but in our federalist system, we can't regulate it in that way. The federal government can, you know, provide some incentives, but it's really going to require the type of paradigm shift that we saw with domestic violence. And state by state, we're going to have a much deeper understanding of what sex trafficking is. And the most important understanding is that we really need to focus our attention on the perpetrators and the buyers, on their thoughts, actions, and decisions, and not on the victims. Right now, the spotlight is on, well, did she make bad choices? Did she return to her pimp too many times? And, you know, if we would be having those conversations about people who are raped without money or about victims of domestic violence, that would be frowned upon. But in the sex trafficking world, that is accepted right now.
Now, we spoke to Cindy McCain, wife of Senator John McCain, not long ago this year. It's one of her personal missions to fight sex trafficking. And she talked about one of the important things being to educate people about what trafficking looks like, in particular airlines she was focusing on. But what do we know about what it looks like if people want to take part and try to help?
Well, right now in America, we tend to think that it looks very foreign and very exotic, that it looks like the movie Taken. It's much more mundane than that. It's often about, you know, it's about traffickers targeting vulnerable people. And if those vulnerable people for child sex trafficking victims are people who may be poor, they may come from broken homes, and they're looking for what pimps often offer them, which is love, acceptance. And so if we keep looking for this very foreign, you know, foreign individuals brought in and kept chained to a radiator, we're going to miss most of the sex trafficking that's happening around us.
And when these kids are rescued, as in the operation with the FBI, what kind of shape do they generally come in as psychologically speaking?
Well, it's really hard. I mean, for many victims of child sex trafficking, they are angry about being rescued. They want to return to their pimp. They may believe that they are in love with that person. And so when we have a narrative in the United States that these victims should be grateful and should act accordingly, I often say we have sort of the Lifetime movie version of victims as the narrative. And then when victims don't behave that way, we often then think, well, then they're not victims. And we have to stop putting expectations on victims. Victims are victims because of what happened to them, not because of how they behave.
And what happens when the kids have been rescued? What sorts of services are available to them to help them reacclimate with families, maybe, in society again?
For U.S. citizen victims, it's really a state-by-state determination about what benefits are available. So, for example, in Michigan, child victims of sex trafficking cannot be put in the child protection system as victims of sexual abuse. If they get into that system at all, it's often through a juvenile delinquency route, and that is in and of itself problematic. In Illinois, they can go in as victims of sexual abuse. So again, there are probably 50 varieties of the types of services available for these victims.
So there's lots of different approaches to treatment and the way sex trafficking victims are seen in the eyes of the state. But can you give us an example of a state that you think is doing good things when it comes to handling child sex trafficking victims?
I think Illinois is doing some really wonderful things. They have categorized child sex trafficking victims as victims of sexual abuse. They are trying to put in place the right support systems, and they have some universities who are working on trying to study really evidence-based approaches to serving these victims. The real dilemma is that while we're happy to talk about human trafficking nationwide, no one is doing the really hard work of figuring out evidence-based ways of treating the types of trauma these individuals have experienced.
So what would you like to see people doing in terms of the hard work you're talking about?
You know, I would like to see people trying new approaches, being willing to fail, but most importantly, being willing to evaluate it. Too often we see in the human trafficking space people giving out really good sound bites that aren't backed up. Sometimes this work is quite mundane and not very sexy, and so we need to take some quiet time and really figure out what works, and more importantly, what doesn't work, so that when we are doing these types of operations that have just happened, that when the victims come out, we have something to offer them that can actually help them.
What would you like listeners to know about child sex trafficking that they may not?
You know, I think the most important thing that I want listeners to know is that child sex trafficking victims only exist because there are buyers in your community. And that's the thing we never talk about. This operation doesn't happen if our husbands, dads, brothers, friends, and others weren't buying sex. And that's tough to hear and tough to think about, but that's the reality.
Bridget, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
We've been talking to Bridget Carr, director of the Human Trafficking Clinic at the University of Michigan Law School.